7 of 9. How's my favorite Borg today?
Annoyed.
Welcome back to Star Trek Discovery Pod. I'm Mike Moody.
And I'm Mariah Gossett.
We just wanted to drop something on the feed and say we hope everybody out there is staying safe, staying healthy.
Yeah, and I hope y'all are baking lots of banana bread or getting that sourdough starter, getting that going. And obviously, I hope you're watching lots of Trek like we've been doing, and you can join us here on the feed for even more content.
Yeah, we also wanted to let you know that we're having a lot of fun over at our Patreon, patreon.com/StarTrekPod. So you should join us there now. And if you do, you'll get instant access to our new bonus podcast series going on right now, The Best of 7 of 9.
Oh, yeah. So we'll be every week we're going to be covering a different Voyager episode, which, of course, we all know is my favorite. We're going to be focusing on 7 of 9, breaking down and analyzing her journey from a little baby Borg to the kick-ass Fenris Ranger that we saw on season 1 of Picard.
And you can only get those bonus pods at patreon.com/StarTrekPod. And right now is a great time to join the Patreon because our patrons typically pay between $1 to $5 an episode. And they're only charged when we put out a regular episode of the pod on the feed. And right now, since Picard season 1 is over and Discovery season 3 isn't happening for a few months, we'll probably only be putting out like 1 to 2 regular episodes on the regular feed per month instead of our regular 4 to 5. So if you sign up now at the $2 tier, you'll likely only get charged like $2 to $4 a month during the next few months, which means you can support us. And you can get all the great patron-only bonus content like our Best of 7 of series every week for the next several weeks at patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
Yeah, and not only will you get those bonus episodes at the $1 and $2 level, but you can also get access to our Slack group, which has been doing weekly watch parties. They've come up with some really fun gifts and content, and they're chatting all the time about what they're watching and listening to and what they are doing to help get through this time.
Yeah, lots of great stuff over on our Patreon. Join today. You'll make us very happy, and you'll give us the support we need to continue making this podcast, to continue covering all the great new Star Trek that's coming out later this year. And we'll be able to keep doing our live shows over on YouTube and making more great Star Trek content for you. So patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Join today. And now we're going to give you a preview of our first Best of 7 of 9 podcast episode that Mariah and I released recently on Patreon. We covered Voyager's Scorpion parts 1 and 2.
Doubleheader.
Double episode, the debut of Jerry Ryan and 7 of 9 on Star Trek. Here's a good chunk of that. And of course, you can get the full episode and the full 7 of 9 podcast series on Patreon. Okay, here's a preview.
It's fair to say we've had our fair number of space babes, the ditzy space babe, throughout Star Trek history. Like, I watch a lot of, recently I've been watching a lot more of the original series, which is just full of the space babe trope. And so it's mm-hmm. been there for a long time in Star Trek. But I think what makes Jerry Ryan's character in 7 of 9 different is the fact that she's like way more than the space babe. She's intellectual. She's a very complicated character. And I think, you know, we oftentimes forget that women can be all of those things. They can be a sex object. They can be intelligent. They can be all of these things. And I think, too, part of the reason I find her character so compelling is because she was assimilated at such a young age. And what Jerry Ryan really does well as 7 of 9 is portraying that confidence of someone who's never had to doubt their physical appearance for so long. You know, she's such a confident and, you know, I mean, even as a part of the collective, she's like so straightforward with everything she's saying. You know, there's no doubt within her mind. And I think even as she becomes more of an individual, that confidence stays with her throughout the entire series.
Yeah, it's there from the beginning. And even in her moments of unsureness later on in the series, when she's grappling with the idea of becoming more human every day, and not understanding social norms and seeing how that separates her from the crew, She still holds her head high and is really does come across as a really confident character. And the performance is great through the entire series. She is so confident. And yeah, I'm super compelled by the character for all the reasons you mentioned. And one of the bigger reasons I'm super compelled by Seven of Nine is that up until this point, we'd had TOS, The Next Generation, a couple seasons of DS9, and all of those Star Trek shows largely centered on Starfleet officers. And now we have a top-billed character on a major Star Trek show who is not a Starfleet officer, who has different ideas of how to do things and bucks the system every chance she gets when she's presented with Starfleet morals and mores and just standard operating procedure. And she challenges it all the time. And that just makes for some great storytelling on Voyager. So I think she really injects something new and something fresh, not just into Voyager, but into the whole Star Trek canon.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why I liked Voyager so much is it is almost like a ragtag crew that is put together. You know, they're not all Starfleet from the beginning. As the series progresses, they kind of grab these sort of tag-alongs throughout the show. You know, they've got Neelix, they've got Kes, which I know there's a lot of feelings about those two characters, but they provide, I think, a lot of levity and some you know, interesting things. Even down to Chakotay and B'Elanna Torres, you know, like they were not actually Starfleet, you know, folks when they first get onto the ship, and they kind of become a part of the crew. And so I think because it's and Paris as well was like in jail, and Janeway breaks him out of not breaks him but takes him out of jail to go on this journey. So yeah. They've always been a ragtag crew.
That's true. It did start off as a ragtag crew, and they're a lot of their origins, you know, they're not necessarily all Starfleet at the beginning, but that was the promise of this show, I think, that we're going to have this ragtag crew and there's going to be all this tension between the Maquis and between the Starfleet officers. And a lot of that largely goes away after the first season.
Yeah, well, I think it's because they throw them into 40,000 light years away from home. And so there's like, it's, you know, their choices are either to band together or be alone.
Yeah. One of my criticisms of the show was that I would have liked to have seen more conflict between the officers and between those two different points of view. Because by this point, by the end of season three and the beginning of season four, they're working as a machine. Like they're a really tight unit. You know, they're all making the same decisions for the most part, that's why it's a breath of fresh air when Chakotay and Janeway butt heads all through this episode. And that conflict is really, really injected into the series, the Starfleet way or another way, and when Seven of Nine really starts to become part of the crew later on. And you mentioned Kes, Jennifer Lean.
Yes.
Her name is removed from the opening credits in the second part of this episode and replaced by Jeri Ryan's because she leaves the show like an episode or two after this. She receives also starring in the title sequence.
Which is kind of crazy, especially for this episode, because she's like on the bridge almost the entire time because she, you know, I mean, to get into sort of the meat of the plot of this is that the Borg finally have an ultimate enemy. It's the species 4, 7, 8, whatever, these big organic alien things. Like,
yeah, they come from they escape from a poorly rendered 90s Nintendo video game.
Yes, very cloudy, like looks like a background of a desktop computer graphic someone made. but they cannot be assimilated easily. And
species 8472.
There it is. Yep. But yeah, so the Borg have this new enemy, and Voyager, the starship, is about to enter Borg space, and they think they found a safe passageway to get there, which they've nicknamed the Northwest Passage, which I think is very funny and weird.
That's so dumb.
but anyway, to move forward. So Voyager, you know, they lose a probe, and then they see the Borg are getting destroyed, and then they finally come along one of the destroyed ships, and they have an encounter with these organic aliens. And Kes is able to communicate with them, or at least to understand and to hear what they're thinking and feeling, because she has psychic visions. And so she's having these like premonitions about what's going to happen to the Borg and to Voyager. So it's kind of setting up this idea that, you know, in the same Trek way we always love, the vision is we're all going to die and we have to figure out how to fix that vision.
Yeah, they really use Kes kind of as a plot device here. But I will say that I really like Jennifer Lean. I think she does a great job for the most part through the entire series. And in this, she's just rocking some great hair.
And I mean, it's look at the waves are on point.
Yeah.
She's got like the Farrah Fawcett coif going.
Because for the most part, she always has a little pixie cut. But here, man, she's really rocking the long locks, looking good.
She's going for it.
So, yeah. What did you think about the cold open of this entire thing? It's just two Borg cubes. They say, you hear that robotic Borg voice, resistance is futile. And then they just blow up. And that's the cold open. It's literally the shortest cold open in Star Trek history. I thought it was like watching it in 2020. I'm like, I just started laughing. I was like, that's silly. But I guess back then it would have been like, oh shit, the Borg are here. Oh fuck, they just blew up. Like, it would have been mind blowing back then.
Right. And I think just because we do have knowledge of like longer Borg history now, it's not as like, oh my God. But I could imagine if that's what played and then you had to sit through some commercials, you'd be very excited about it.
Very much. And especially since the Borg have showed up on Voyager before, but it's never been in the presence of a cube or a fleet. It's always been, oh, we found a random Borg here, or here's a bunch of what we would now call XBs. Mm-hmm. There's an episode with a bunch of XBs that Chakotay meets. That's where he got hooked up to that mini collective, which is how he's able to tap into the collective in this episode. But yeah, we've never seen a full-on Borg like attack or a bunch of a fleet of cubes on Voyager. And this is post First Contact, the Borg movie, the TNG. And they used a lot of the same costumes and effects and makeup and visuals for the movie Borg, which is why they look a lot more threatening here than they ever did in The Next Generation, which is great. And this starts a huge trend for Voyager. After this, there are a ton of Borg appearances. There's a whole new chapter of Borg lore that this episode starts. We get a new Borg queen. There's so much, to the point where in Star Trek lore, Janeway is put up on a pedestal as the, you know, the great Starfleet, you know, fighter of the Borg right next to Picard, because she comes up against them so many times.
And I like that they sort of set that precedent even right at the beginning as she's doing all of her research about the Borg, trying to make this like huge decision for the ship. And, you know, she's quoting Picard and doing, I guess, some sort of impersonation that Chakotay sees. I didn't really feel like there was that much of an impersonation, but
yeah, I rewinded it because he's like, you did a pretty good Picard. And I was like, did she? No, she's
I know. I was like,
like, she's doing a pretty good Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's like a funny thing as we're seeing her do all this research and, you know, like now she is regarded as probably having the most interactions and is probably one of the first Starfleet officers to ever have any kind of alliance with the Borg that allowed for some sort of safe passage for the ship. And, you know, even though they sort of went back on that, she still figured out a way to go forward with it, which I was, so the like old tale that Chakotay talks about, the fox and the scorpion.
Isn't it supposed to be a frog?
It's supposed to be a frog.
Yeah.
And so I was like, did the writer just like misremember for the episode, or did they have to change it for some copyright reason?
Yeah.
It was just really funny to me.
That is funny. Maybe they tried to like future it up, like, oh, in the future, this story evolves and it's no longer a frog. I don't know.
It's a fox. I was like, but it's still like a fox. I mean, I guess a fox can swim across a creek, but a frog makes more sense. Anyway. Yeah. It was, you still get the point of the whole, the moral of the story stays the same.
Right. And I want to kind of jump back to the beginning of this episode. Like, we get that cold open. It's really impactful for the time. And then when the episode proper starts, we're in the holodeck with
with Janeway, yeah.
Janeway and Leonardo da Vinci. I will say this. We're mercifully spared from Janeway's old holosuite addiction, in which she was like the maid bringing up kids in like a turn of the century farmhouse. This is
a thing.
So she's moved on from that to being apparently Leonardo da Vinci's
little apprentice,
which is cool. You have John Rhys Davies playing Leonardo da Vinci from Lord of the Rings. He played Gimli. Mm-hmm. He's also in the Indiana Jones movies. He's chewing the scenery.
He's going for it.
He is going for it. Apparently, the producers really wanted him for this role. They didn't even ask him to audition. They just offered it to him, and he said yes within an instant because he was a huge Star Trek fan.
Nice.
So that's cool. What did you think about Da Vinci here? I think I like how I ask you, what'd you think? Then I tell you what I think. she talks to Da Vinci and says, I want to be here because I'm looking for inspiration and I want to be around a great, brilliant mind like yours and just soak it all in and have inspiration for my own life and my own work and creations. And that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I think it also foreshadows her relationship with Seven throughout the series, because they really push each other forward in a lot of ways, Seven and Janeway.
Yeah.
And Seven definitely becomes an inspiration and kind of a spur to Janeway to really change who she is as the series goes on.
Yeah, I also thought it was a good sort of preamble to the disagreement that I think her and Chakotay were going to have throughout this episode, because she needed to be challenged by a different individual mind other than her own, I think, for them to finally come up with the best plan by the end of part two. And, you know, I think that time with Da Vinci just like allows her to have that blank space to realize what was right in front of her all along, right? In the same way that she's pointing out to Leonardo that, you know, his wing design is based on birds that flap instead of birds that glide, you know.
She's like, I know, I'm from the future. Okay, so Da Vinci seems to have invented a jerk-off machine in this episode.
I think it was to hammer, but ideal?
I know. And it's based off like some of his drawings that were found later, but it's just this robotic, steampunk robotic torso with one long right arm that jerks up and down. Yeah. And they're just like hovering in front of it and holding it while they're having this conversation. And it's just so distracting. I'm like, it's a jerk-off machine. Okay. So, yeah, you're saying Voyager's probe is caught on video. The last thing it sees is the Borg cube, then the inside of the Borg cube, then like a Borg like poking at it. Okay. So
destruction.
The Voyagers in Borg space, shit is real. But I love all the twists and turns in this episode, because if it was just the Borg, it's really hard to tell a Borg story that's not just let's keep running away from the Borg and come up with some kind of Star Trek bullshit technobabble idea to blow them up or to zap them into another dimension. We've seen that before on other Trek shows. But what they do here is just keep ramping up the surprises. Like, oh, the Borg are after us, but they're not after us. They're running away from someone. Well, let's go find out what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And when Voyager gets to where the Borg were going, their entire fleet is decimated. And so that brings up another question. Who could do this to the Borg? Are they friend or foe? I think it's script-wise, it's a really refreshing way to present a Borg story.
All right, and we're back. So we hope you enjoyed that preview of our Best of Seven series, and you can get access to the ongoing series plus tons of more stuff at patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
Live long and prosper.
Bye.